is Road to the Draft with Cal Toomey and Matt Edwards.
Hello, everyone. Episode 13 of Road to the Draft on afl.com.au. Cal Toomey, how are you?
Good, thank you, Nat. Edwards, how are you?
That's very formal this morning.
What's happening?
Not a lot. I was actually wanting to do a countdown to the draft, actually have a number of days, but we still don't have a date. What is going on?
Yeah, it's a good question, isn't it? We don't have dates for trade period, let alone the draft, 6 weeks or so later. So, yeah, I think it's most likely to be in Melbourne over 2 days or one night and the next day, but it's still yet to be confirmed.
It's like Christmas. I just want to know when it is.
Well, although you know
we actually have a date for Christmas.
We do, yeah, that doesn't change.
Come on, Gil. All right, you might have to go up and speak to the big boss upstairs later, but we do have a special guest in the studio. It is a very good welcome to recruiting manager from GWS, Adrian Caruso. Welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks, Nat. It's good to be here again. And obviously tough to back up after Steve Canole last week. What a great guest he was.
You tune in, don't you, Adrian? So you're an avid listener. You guys listen to him on the road trips occasionally, I think.
It's good, yeah, especially when you go on road trips and things. It's kills 40 minutes of the trip. So it's,
do you listen the whole way through? Because I reckon people just drop off after halfway.
I tend to stay until the end bit where Cal says who his song of the week is. Then I just tend to tune out.
See, Adrian thinks he's got a taste in music, but I just add to that, I think, every week.
All right. Well, you'll have to come up with a song of the week too. Last week was the first week I actually knew what the song of the week was. But let's get on and talk about all things recruiting. So what are you, champs are finished. What are you guys doing at the moment? I'm sure it's still very busy.
It is. I suppose it's probably different to earlier in the year. So after the champs, we tend to have a wrap-up where we go through sort of each of the players who played through the carnival and work out, okay, who have we seen enough of? So like a Sam Walsh, for example, we don't need to go and watch him play anymore. We know what he is. We've seen enough of him. And an Isaac Rankin, the same thing.
Yep.
And who are the leftover players that we think we need to just cover off a bit more on? Some guys after the championships might only have 4 or 5 games left before their seasons are finished. So we need to cover off on those guys and make a call before it's too late. So it's more or less just after the champs, focusing on those guys that we think we need to see more of. And then obviously starting the process in terms of interviewing kids, starting to look over the psych tests and sort of planning for the back end of the year and trade period, because we want to, before trade period, be in a position where I can say to Jason McCartney, okay, this is what we think of the draft pool. These are the strong areas of the draft. I think we should trade out of this part of the draft and that sort of thing. So it's more just about gathering information before that trade period.
How many people or players are on your list at the moment that you're watching still?
There's probably 60, I reckon, as a guess.
Yep.
And that includes some mature ages and then probably AFL-listed players are separate. But in terms of kids running around at the moment, there's probably about 60.
And do you shorten that or sharpen that as the year goes on in the next 6 weeks as finals sort of arrive? And do many generally at this point still add themselves into that group at this point?
I would say it's rare for players to add themselves in, but that 60 has probably come down a lot from the start of the year and it's still coming down. So each week that we might go and watch someone who we're still unsure of, we might be able to, now that we've seen enough of them, we can say, okay, look, we've seen enough, we've covered off, he's probably a no for us, knock him off the list so we don't waste our time and energy.
What does your office look like? Do you have like post-its all over the wall, whiteboards? Like, I'm curious to see what it would be like because I have this image in my head and it's probably nothing like that.
Well, I suppose we may be a bit different to everyone else. Ours is very bare. It's just an office.
Yep.
I'm not big on having the big whiteboard with all the magnets and that sort of thing. And it's a bit of sort of a talking point in the office that the others say, oh, you know, it'd be great to have a board. I just think the board on the wall is just for show. It's like so American. You don't need it. I've got a spreadsheet. So if I want to look at it at night, I can just open up the spreadsheet and look at that. I don't see the point of having the board up, but I do understand why some people like it. Some people are more visual and that sort of thing, whereas I'm a bit more, I'd just rather have it
so
on the
computer. Have you got in there then? Just
nothing. A TV screen on the wall.
Yep.
We've got nice windows overlooking Burke Street.
Okay, so you got a little bit of light in there at least.
We do have some light. Yeah, it's not a... It's not that bad. It's actually a nice office that we've got at the moment.
Well, we're going to get to this later, but I might as well bring it up now because you are based in Melbourne, like a lot of interstate clubs are. But what are the pros and cons of being an interstate club that's recruiting office is away from its home base, I guess?
Yeah, it's a good question. I worked at the Bulldogs for a few years, so I've experienced both dynamics. The current one, working away from the club, the good part about it is you don't get caught up in the day-to-day, and if you lose, you don't come in on a Monday and everyone's sad, and there's no highs and lows. You're sort of unemotional. You stay removed from it. You make decisions that are not focused on, you know, emotion and what's actually happening in the footy club. And our job in recruiting is removed from what's generally going on in the club. So you don't want to sort of get caught up in that as well. But the negatives are that you don't get the chance to have constant communication with coaches, be involved in meetings, chats with the players, all these sorts of things that make you feel like you're part of a footy club. You don't get that.
Okay.
But, you know, we've sort of worked a lot on involving our recruiting staff more at the club than what we have in the past.
Well, how often would you go up?
I try and go up at least once a month.
Okay.
And it might be for a meeting, but I'll tie it into, I'll spend a couple of days rather than just go up for the meeting. And our recruiting staff, we've tried to get them up once or twice during the year as well, which we've never done in the past, just
when,
for that reason.
When do you start involving Leon in these decisions? Is it a bit later after the season's finished, or do you try and meet with him when you get up there each month?
Yeah, so once a month we have a list management meeting. Okay. And that doesn't really generally cover off on the draft. Maybe there might be once in the middle of the year we cover off on the draft, but outside of that, those meetings more tend to be about list management things. But in terms of draft, it's more like, well, I have constant conversations with him now about players that I like and players that, you know, we're looking at and types that we might be able to bring in. But it's not really until this season's over when he can actually clear his head of the actual season and then start focusing on draft.
You said before that your list is about 60 at the moment. A list of 80 came out last week who will be invited to the NAB AFL Draft Combine in October. Talk us through that process from a club's perspective, because each was able to nominate a number of players they would like to attend. How did you do it? How do you go about it?
So I think it's the week after the national championships, we get an email saying you've got a week to submit your nominations of up to 50 players that you'd like to invite to the national combine. So we just sit down as a team and we just sort of say, okay, who are the 50 kids that we want to nominate? If we feel like we've got a bit too many, then we might just take off, like, say, Sam Walsh, because everyone else would.
That's what I was going to say. Do you even bother putting Walsh and Lukosius and Rankin in?
Not really, but sometimes you don't have 50 names, whereas this year we were fine with 50, so we were able to drop off some of those guys. Once we send that list of 50 through, we hear back a week later with who the nominees were, which I think came out on Friday.
Yep.
And then from there, tomorrow we've actually got to submit a list of another 50 or up to 50 that we'd like to invite to the state combines, and then that list will come out in a week or so.
Let's say there's a mature ager or a player in the VFL or someone that you've spotted that you like. Do you bother putting him on the list, or you just hide him away and hope that no one else puts his name on?
It depends, because sometimes you actually want to see them test and see.
You can test individually, though, can't you?
You can.
If you want to.
Definitely.
Yep.
But I suppose sometimes you know that a player is going to get nominated anyway. I don't think there's that many games that get played in that respect. Maybe for some of those real smokies there might be. But from our point of view, I'd probably just rather see him get tested, and no one's going to know that we like that player.
Yep. Now, the Under-18 Championships, Nat mentioned, finished a few weeks ago. What did you make of it from your perspective, and the players that rose up the ranks? Were there many? Were there enough? Were there the amount that you would have hoped for?
It was probably about what we'd expected, I think. We've seen enough of them heading into the carnival that there's never too many surprises. There's always a few that sort of show that they can really step up to the level, and a few that that probably fall away when they get to the level. I think the best part of the Under-18 Championships for me is the Allies concept.
Yep.
Just to be able to see those Division 2 players play against the Division 1 players. I think in the past we saw a lot of kids dominate the Division 2 series. Without the Allies there, they get drafted pretty high and they sort of fail. But I think the Allies really sorts them out in terms of where do they sit in comparison to everyone else. So I think the guys that stood up in the Allies team, guys like Chase Jones and McFadden and Briggs and these sort of players, Blakey, Taron Thomas, they've shown that they're at the level. Whereas
if they're just playing for Tasmania or Queensland,
we wouldn't know.
Yeah.
Overall, when we look at this year's draft pool, what's separating them from previous years' drafts, do you think?
The best part of this pool, I think, is just the diversity in terms of all different types.
Yeah, okay.
I don't think we can look at it and say, oh, it's a midfield heavy group or there's all different types. Probably the one is probably the ruckman. We don't think there's there's any genuine ruckman in the draft. You know, you'd love to know that there's a Brody Grundy or a Tim English coming through. I don't think there's the confidence in that. But outside of that, I think all other types are covered pretty well in depth, whether it's key defenders or, you know, small forwards. There's a bit of everything, which I think is good for clubs to know that no matter what you want, you'll be able to find it.
Who do you think's in the mix to be number one?
I think the guys that generally get mentioned, it's hard to go past if you want a mid, Smith and Walsh or Haitley. If you want to go tall, you've got the Kings.
You think Bailey Smith's in there in that mix?
Yeah, I think he is. I think his performances throughout the year and what he's shown in terms of his professionalism and his dedication has shown that, you know, he's actually gone forward and had an impact, which is definitely a good thing to have for a gun mid.
Now, I guess the question that's an interesting one, because everyone looks back at previous drafts and where the players might fit in. We've seen Cam Rayner this year, and this is one just I told you we'd be asking, but where do you think Cam Rayner would be in this year's pool? Because as a player, there's not one like him in this year's pool, and that's what Steve Cannell was saying last year. That's the reason they took him, because you could probably get another midfielder like the Andrew Brayshaw types in this year's draft, but there's no Rayner in this year's draft. So if you had to put it, I don't know, I've put you on the spot, but if you had to put Rayner in this year's group, where would you have him?
I think it's more up to the club that's picking. So Brisbane looked at it and thought, we'd rather try and take a punt on someone that we think could be something special rather than a Brayshaw who might be similar to a Sam Walsh and Bailey Smith, who are a bit more safe. Yep. You know what you're going to get. For us, it would be, you know, last year we probably took a bit of a punt on Bonner. So this year there might be that we might err on the side of being safe. So I think it's club by club. Some clubs have that type, so they might not want that. But in terms of, you know, who could be the best player, Rayner would probably have more scope to be the best player in this year's draft, the same as he was last year.
Turn the tables on you, Cal. Where do you think?
Yeah, top three, definitely.
Yeah.
And I'd be surprised if many thought otherwise, to be honest, because his season last year was pretty good too. I mean, we know what Walsh can do. We know what Lukosius can do. And Rankin's the same this year, but Rayner proved it across all last year. And we've seen that at AFL level so far this year. You mentioned your sort of concerns or questions about whether there's any genuine ruckman in this year's pool. One guy who was the All-Australian ruckman at under 18 level is tied to the Giants, Kieran Briggs. What can you tell us about him as a prospect and, I guess, your interest in him?
Kieran's a great story because a year ago he played some academy series early in the year, didn't really get going at any point, played some okay footy in the local Sydney comp, but he wasn't someone who was on anyone's draft radar. So this year he's come in, he's had a good preseason, and, you know, his academy series this year was better, and then he's come in and sort of took on the responsibility of the ruck role for the Allies and had a really good carnival. And the best thing for Kieran is he's given himself a chance now, whether it's with us or whether it's with someone else, he's put himself in the frame. And I think with guys like that, it's just good for footy in Western Sydney to see, you know, obviously we took Nick Shipley last year, and this year there's a Kieran Briggs. It promotes the game in those areas, and it's good for those kids to see that, okay, well, I'm actually might be a chance, and it's good for the game.
Yeah, you have a really good list, and everyone's really excited about what the Giants might be able to produce towards the end of this season, but the ruck area is probably an area that you could bolster. So the timing of him coming through would seem to be a nice fit.
It would seem to be. I suppose the question that we've got to answer is, he's 199 centimetres. Do we think he's going to be a ruckman at AFL level? We've also put 3 years into Matthew Flynn, who's developed really well in the NEAFL. So if we were to bring in another one, where does that sit? Dawson Simpson's really taken on the load this year and, you know, he's in career best form. So there's no reason to suggest he won't be able to do that again going forward. These are all the decisions that sort of come at the end of the year when you're going through list management.
Well, you know where your picks are going to be as well.
All those sorts of things, you know, looking at where he might get bid. We've just got to sort of put him in the pool. But I suppose it's a good problem to have, the fact that he's been able to improve his game to a level where he's probably going to get drafted now, which is just great for the game.
Matthew Walker's another one of your academy prospects. Kicked 6 goals, I think, for Murray on the weekend. Tell us about him.
Matt was one of the best juniors going around when he was 15, 16. He was dominant. He was really highly rated. Since then, he's probably struggled with his body, hasn't really had a great run at it in terms of getting out on the park consistently and performing. He's played some good NEAFL footy for us at times, kicking 3s and 4s, and then he's had some other games where he hasn't really had much of an impact. So I suppose, you know, the fact that he's gone back and kicked 6 for Murray on the weekend is really strong. Hopefully he can take that form into the back half of the year. He was one who'd missed out on a international combine invite. So, I mean, I'm assuming he'll get a state combine invite. There's always opportunities for guys, no matter which yep. combine they go to. If you perform well in the back half of the year, you're always a chance.
And James Peatling's the other one who looks like being a contender as an academy prospect. Tell Giants fans about him.
Yeah, James is another Western Sydney boy, which is, you know, obviously really good, again, that we're able to sort of find kids in that area and develop them through the ranks. James, again, played some okay footy in the Allies, but his best form has been through the NEAFL. He's played some good games for us there. He's a small forward who can sort of push up onto a wing. He's sort of just got nuisance factor. He's just sort of dangerous. He just knows where to go. He's got some smarts about him. He's got some areas he needs to work on, the same as Kieran does as well. But he's come a long way and he's definitely put himself in the frame.
I'm curious to know, what's your recruiting philosophy? What has it been over the last couple of years, and does it change this year at all, or do you sort of stick with what the plan has been?
Well, from my point of view, when I took over in this role, we had just lost the prelim to the Dogs, and watching us then, the things that sort of we sort of spoke about were, we need guys who can stand up in the big moments in the big finals. So, you know, you talk about the ability to win contested footy, the ability to be strong defensively. So that's been pretty much our focus. So you look at guys like Taranto, De Boer. Last year we brought in Bonner and Taylor, sort of those good competitors with athleticism who will actually sort of do the defensive stuff as well. Now that we've addressed that to some degree, there might be scope for us to change that philosophy. Okay. I think you can't just bring in just one type of player consistently. I think the one thing that you always need to look at is character, and what we find as part of our philosophy being important is resilience. The kids who tend to come to Sydney and stay with us are the resilient boys who have got that perseverance in their makeup, whereas the ones who have left us have sort of maybe lacked in that area. So that's been something that we've been really placed high importance on.
And obviously, because you take Aidan Bonner last year after two knee reconstructions, he was able to overcome those setbacks and play some good footy towards the end of last season. At what point of last season did you identify him as a guy that you really liked?
Well, at the start of the year, we thought he was going to be tied to Melbourne NGA. That was the information we were being given. And he didn't play until June. We sort of knew about him, but we'd never seen him play. He played a couple of school games and showed a bit, and then he really didn't get going, to be honest. No. He didn't play a dominant
bits
game.
Bits and pieces, weren't there?
Bits and pieces. I suppose the turning point for him was probably that All-Stars game on grand final day, and I wasn't a big advocate for that game, but went to that game, and you're actually seeing him play in the most AFL-like game that he's ever played in.
And on the MCG.
Yeah. And he was dominant against his peers. And that gave us the confidence that, okay, when he gets right, yes, it's a punt, it's pick 11 in the draft, but that was the day that probably we realised that, okay, he's good enough to be there.
It was you didn't have pick 11 at that point. You had picks in the 20s. Was there some part of you that thought, oh, Aidan, I wish you hadn't have played quite as well, because we thought we might get you later in the piece?
There definitely was some part of me, but I suppose there's probably other clubs out there thinking the same thing. And to think that he would have got through to 25 would have been unlikely. We always thought that for someone like Aidan, it would be a club that might have had multiple picks that could, you know, had a bit of protection that you could take him knowing that you've got another safer option there. Whereas with us, in the end, once we traded up to 11, our next picks weren't until the late 20s, but we were still confident enough to be able to take him there.
We haven't seen him at AFL level yet, but by all reports in the NEAFL, he's been killing it nearly every week, and he's good pressure, ball magnet, all those kinds of things. How's he progressing? How have you seen his progression this year? And will we potentially see a debut in the last sort of few rounds?
He's actually had a really good year. Obviously, you would have liked him to have played some AFL games, but I think this year was always set that it would be a development year for someone who hadn't played much footy and hadn't played much dominant footy last year, whereas this year he's actually been able to dominate at times in the NEAFL. And our development coaches in Damien Trustlove and Adam Schneider have done some really good work with him in the NEAFL. He's got areas that he needs to work on to get to the AFL. But for someone who last year, I think he averaged 14 touches a game in the TAC Cup, this year he's playing permanent midfield in the NEAFL and he's getting it 20-plus times. Mm. He's winning contested ball and his defensive pressure around the ball is really, really strong. It's more just that sort of running ability in general that he's going to need to work on before I think the coaches have got the confidence. He could be given a taste at any point, but I think the fact now that our side is probably a bit more stronger in terms of depth, it might be a bit hard for him now.
Can't wait to see him though.
So, how do you address this need for a small forward? Because you've got two, and we've both seen both of them at AFL level. They're different sort of players, Zach Langdon and Brent Daniels, but they both offer a fair bit of spark.
Yeah, that's a funny one because it was always one, I suppose, everyone always thought, oh, the Giants need a small forward. They don't have a small forward. And this was ever since we came into the competition. We never really felt the need to reach for one. It was, okay, let's wait and see. If there's one there that we like, we'll take them, but let's not
pick one for the sake. I thought you might take Ben Ainsworth a couple of years ago and he was in the mix.
Well, he was in the mix, but again, we didn't want to reach and take one for the sake of it. Yep. And obviously we loved him that year and took him. But that draft was interesting because we had pick 54 and we were sitting there and Willy Rioli was one that we were desperate to get.
Really?
And we thought, okay, finally we found out a small forward, he was mature age, we thought he could come and have an impact straight away. And pick 52, two picks before us, West Coast snapped him up.
when that happens, do you all just look at each other and just clench your mouth to just, you don't want to look like you're
swearing
your overly head. Disappointed. It's like when you're playing cricket, you just don't look like you're feeling any pain.
I suppose the other hard thing with that is you've still got to call someone's name out of 54, yeah. So you don't want to look too shattered. Yeah. You're prepared, but it's, you know, like when it's someone like a Willy that, you know, you think's got the excitement factor and the skill to be able to help you in a position that you actually need, and it's in the mid-50s in the draft, you're obviously disappointed that he's gone. But I suppose the blessing out of that was, you know, we still took Lachie Tisiani and he was going okay until he'd done his knee. But the following year, which was last year, pick 27, we didn't expect Brent Daniels to be there because we rated him as the best small forward in the draft. So yep. The fact that we were able to snap him up there was obviously really, really good.
So what number would that have been then if he was the best small forward in the draft, roughly, on your board?
Well, I think this is maybe a misconception that you think that we do a board in terms of the whole draft. Well, like the way we do it is if we've got pick 11, we don't rank the Brayshaw, Chera, Dow, okay. Because they're never going to get to us. Okay. There's no need for us to waste our energy on those guys. Let's just look at who's going to be available. So it might have equated to Brent Daniels being, say, pick 15,
yep.
But that's just a guess. I actually have no idea.
Okay.
So it was good for us to actually snap him up there. But regardless of what we did with or without Daniels, Langdon was always the one we wanted to take at 56.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you sense there was any other interest in him? What was the sort of take on if he'd definitely be there? Were you worried about another club jumping in? Given the previous year as well.
Yeah, there was slight concern, and that's the unknown of the draft. You just never know. We thought we'd appreciate what Zach offered more than what other clubs would. But I suppose all he needs one other club. He had spoken to a couple of others, but we tried to shut it down after we'd spoken to him so that we didn't think anyone thought we were genuinely interested, and in the end we were able to get him there.
He's been great.
He has been. He's credit to John Giramondo, who works for us looking at WA and SA talent, and he spotted Zach late in the year, and it was the need that he could help us in a position of need, but it was just his work rate and his ability to perform in that waffle competition. And I suppose once we went over and interviewed him, it was we basically walked out of the interview saying we have to draft this kid. Mm. We just knew he had the mental toughness that not many kids have got, and it was just a no-brainer for us then at 56.
Sam Taylor's the other one that's been really impressive since he made his debut in round 11. He's pretty much played every game since. Tell us about how you looked at him in the draft and the decision behind, you know, selecting him.
Sam's another one. As I spoke about with Brent and Sam, we both rated them really highly, and we probably weren't confident that they were going to get to 27 and 28. So what we tried to do on the last day of trade was move our 27 and 28 up into, say, a pick 20, and then maybe down to 35. So turn 27 and 28 into 20 and 35 or something around that. And there were a couple of clubs that we inquired about. And the reason for that was we didn't think we'd be getting those two players there.
Yep.
And the drop-off from them was pretty great. So I suppose this year the fact that you might be able to trade all the way up to draft night would help that. But in the end, Sam, while Brent helped us in terms of a need, Sam probably didn't. It wasn't something that we sat there at the end of last year and thought, oh, we need to get a young key defender in. It was just, we just think this kid is just that good that we just want to pick him. And we were surprised that he was there. And he's forced his way in a position that we haven't needed. I mean, Aiden Corr and Phil were holding up the key defensive spots, but Sam forced his way in just through his sheer competitiveness and athleticism. And he's been able to do some important jobs for us.
Yeah, he's been great.
2016 crop you mentioned before, headed by Tim Taranto and Will Setterfield. We haven't seen much of Will, unfortunately. I think he's been away at the moment enjoying his time.
He just got back.
He's been all over Europe for a few weeks in the middle of his rehab from his knee reconstruction. And Tim Taranto has been in the midfield all season and has been excellent. Have you been I don't know, surprised at all about his ability to step straight into an AFL midfield over the past couple of years and just do it and look so comfortable?
Probably not, because I think watching Tim through that 18th year, you just knew that he was just going to come in and get to the level. He, no matter what game he played, whether it was school footy, champs, TAC finals, whatever it was, he just stepped up to the level. And we knew that that's the type of character he was, that he just rocks up every week. So it hasn't surprised me. Sometimes I watch him and think, I just can't believe he's a second year player.
Yeah, he's so big as well. You just bump into him occasionally, you know, when he's in town or at a Giants game or whatnot. He's extraordinarily big and strong for a guy who's 20. Mm.
He is, and but he's versatile. He's not just your inside mid who can't play anywhere else. What we've been able to do this year, there's been weeks where he's had to play on the wing. There's been weeks where he's had to play forward, and he just does what he's told. He's had to do run with roles in the midfield. He's just that type of kid who, no ego, I'll just do what the coach tells me to do, but he just does it at a high level.
We mentioned Will Setterfield. We did an interview with him, actually, when he just did his knee, unfortunately, and that was with his cousin as well, Izzy Huntington, who plays for the Bulldogs in the AFLW. So it was a nice little interview on AFLW. com.au, but
you're pumping yourself up.
Yeah,
there.
I am. But it's just such a shame we haven't really been able to see the best from him because he's such a talent.
It is a shame. He's had no luck. So even in his 17th year, his 18th year, and now he's 2 years since we've drafted him, he's had no luck. So hopefully that turns. It's happened before. He's done his rehab, you know, as well as he could. I think he's 4.5 months in or so now. So he's just sort of moving into the next phase of his rehab. But I think he'll, by the time preseason comes in sort of November, we're confident that he'll be sort of ready to go and can have a big summer. And he would have played AFL this year if he wasn't injured. So that's just the disappointing fact that, you know, when you get injuries and there's young kids there that you know could step in, and he was able to step in last year in his first year at times. So we're confident that he's going to be able to get there. It's just a matter of just waiting.
He was a top 10 bid out of the academy, as was Jacob Hopper the previous year before that. Would you like a certain percentage of players on your list from New South Wales ACT, and how much has your zone changed since it was cut by the AFL at the start of last year? How much has that meant in terms of the different level of talent and quality coming through your academy?
It probably hasn't affected us too much. The disappointing part was that Jason Saddington and our academy coaches do a great job of promoting the game and developing and coaching those areas of, you know, Albury and along the river. So it was disappointing to lose that. In terms of it affecting us as a club and in a draft sense, it probably hasn't affected us too much. We would still like to promote those areas by drafting from there. We think it's good. The most easy way to look at it is for us to be able to retain players, it's much easier to retain kids from southern New South Wales or Western Sydney than it is if we were to draft Victorians. They come up, then we've got to try and sign them, and then you can lose them home. So I think while clubs looked at it as it's an unfair advantage in terms of who the Giants get to access, I think from our point of view it was more about it makes it easier to retain players, which surely is better for the competition rather than having us draft Victorians and then losing them.
Looking ahead to the trade period and I guess the draft as well and the off season, what when you look at the list, are there certain areas that you think we really need to bolster and the most pressing needs, I guess, of the club at this stage?
The hard part of this year is that because we haven't had a full run with our best team out there, it's been hard to assess. And we feel like now we're starting to get our best side back on the park. So the coming weeks will probably determine whether or not there are any pressing needs. So it'll be more at the end of the year when we sit back and say, okay, well, what's our best side going forward? Yep. What's our depth like in each position? Are there any holes? Right now, we don't think there's any holes, whereas last year, you know, you would look at small forward and say potentially there's a hole there. With Mummy potentially retiring, you know, obviously there was a ruck issue last year. But right now, we think we've got a very balanced list. It's well-rounded, but that can turn quickly with injuries or with form or anything, or with players moving positions as well, which we think we've got some flexibility with players.
We've seen the importance of Josh Kelly since he came back from that groin injury. He's just a star of the competition. How was that period last year in the recruiting team when you don't know if one of your best players, one of the best players in the competition, is going to be with you the following year?
It was difficult, just the unknown. But in terms of, like, in a recruiting sense, it didn't affect our jobs too much. The day-to-day of what we do, assessing the talent pool for that year, whether or not Josh left or not, and we might have got an extra pick or not, that would have just taken care of itself in the lead up to the draft. So it wasn't something that we, you know, spent a lot of time. It was just more, you know, yes, it's disappointing, the unknown and the speculation, but we were pretty good at just blocking that out and just worrying about when that decision was made.
I want to ask you about Toby Green. Mm-hmm. I know you weren't in head of the recruiting when he was drafted way back, but what's he like? Because I love him. I love watching him play.
Yeah,
I love his
watch.
Influence. Just from an outside sort of perspective on the team and what he brings. But internally, what can you tell us about him and his impact at the club and his influence just on teammates? Because he seems like the most popular bloke there, and I just love the way he plays.
He's hard not to love when you know him. Yeah. And I think the playing group, obviously, without him there, it's kind of like you're missing someone. Like, he's part of the team. He's such an important part of the team. So since he's been back, the other players just feel better when they're out in the field knowing that Toby's there, because they've got full confidence in him as a player. But off the field, I suppose he's just someone that you just really warm to, because he's just got that bubbly personality. He knows where he's at. He's not someone who really has no idea or no sense of what other people think of him. He knows that he's a bit of a lad, and he plays on that, but he's not an idiot either. And Leon's got full faith in him and what he's been able to do for us off the field, but also now, you know, times to perform, so he knows that as well.
He had a little break at Port Douglas when I was up there.
And, oh, really?
We actually ended up on the same boat that went out snorkeling.
Is that right?
Yep.
You have the Speedos on?
He got around in these, like, fluoro Speedos. They were black with, like, fluoro leopard spots all over them. And I'm just looking at him going, oh, God. But that's what I expected from Toby Green. But everyone loved him, all the staff. So you can sort of see that personality coming through. I want to ask you about Lachie Whitfield, though, because we've seen him over the past few weeks, really a few months, playing off half back, and it's just been so impressive. Like, that move has been a revelation. How have you seen it?
Yeah, well, I guess when you talk about need, you know, looking early part of the year when Zach went down and obviously Nathan had left us, there was potentially a need for a half back. But to have someone like Lachie just move to half back and just take on that role and be one of the best halfbacks in the comp, you know, there's no need for us to go and look for a halfback, because we know we can always shift Lachie back there. We've got Zach to come back in. We've got Isaac coming along. So I suppose it's hard. It's always a moving piece in terms of things like what do you need and that sort of thing. But having players like Lachie who are versatile enough to play multiple positions is invaluable.
I'm going to talk a couple of contracts now. Dylan Shields' name keeps popping up. The rumours are abound about him potentially going back to Melbourne at some point. He's out of contract at the end of next year. Has any club come to you guys about a potential deal this year?
No, at this stage, it's really speculation. And what tends to happen with Giants players at this time of year, every year, is there's speculation on our players. The good position we're in this year, and it's credit to the list management team, is that the guys who are probably going to get speculated about, like, say, a Dylan, is contracted. So whereas in the past, we would have, say, 2 to 3 players that were in demand. They were out of contract. There's going to be speculation. They were maybe going to look and see what their options were. That's fair enough. This year, at the moment, it's just speculation because they're all contracted and we haven't really started those discussions with anyone just yet.
Okay, and there's a couple of names for next year as well to keep an eye on, because Shiel, Canelio, Tomlinson, Haynes will all be free agents or out of contract at the end of next year, as well as Josh Kelly. How do you guys prepare as a team for that, given, as you say, this year it's looking pretty good in terms of the out of contract guys, but next year all the talk will be going again?
It's going to be difficult. And what we've found across the last few years since free agency come in is that most players who are free agents don't tend to sign too early. So they will play it out a bit. Some of them might sign over summer. Some of them might sign early next year. Some might be later next year. It's all an unknown, really. There's no guarantees that all of those guys are going to leave, or any of them are going to leave, because all of them have re-signed numerous times in the past, probably when other clubs were confident that they were going to get them, and that we were probably a bit dubious about whether we'd be able to keep them. The culture that we've built through Leon and Dave down, and the success that we've had in the last few years, these guys want to be part of that. So we just need to continue to focus on that, and hopefully it takes care of itself.
I was going to say, do you feel like you're past that retention issue phase?
Well, it seems like it, because all the boys are signed. You get to the end of next year and we've got a pretty good, a very good list, and there's no one sort of in demand that's out of contract. I think it's a credit to what we've been able to do that we're not sitting here now paranoid about losing players because they're all there, they're all signed, they're all happy.
Yep.
So much talk about rule changes and the tweaks to the game and should we change things and zones and all those scary things that a lot of people are hesitant about. Where do you think footy is going? And I guess, like, when you look at recruiting, are you having to think for, you know, 5 years down the track and what the game's actually going to look like?
We had a meeting about it a few weeks ago. You think about it a little bit, but it's not going to change your recruiting philosophy. Okay. At the end of the day, you're still going to pick players who can play and players that are, you know, good athletically and good character, all that sort of thing. You know, it might tend to suit some players, but we actually don't even know that it might either. It's all an unknown in terms of what the rules might do. So I think the best thing for us at the moment would be just to keep recruiting the players that we are. But also having the back of our mind that, yeah, probably down the track it might change a bit. So if you were going to err on players who it might suit rather than the ones that it might not suit.
This is a more broad question, just interested to ask you. When you go to a game of under 18 footy, what's the perfect player? Mm-hmm. You know, is it the running midfielder who can go all day? Is it the hybrid bloke who can go midfield forward, the Degoe type? Is it the key forward who takes all the grabs and kicks the goals? Is there a perfect player? Or a perfect type that suits how the game's played now? Do you know what I mean?
I know what you mean. They're probably, I'd say probably the Degoe type, just the hybrid, you know, 188 to 190 centimetre forward who can play in the midfield, can win their own ball but can get on the outside, good endurance base, good speed, good skill.
Yep.
You know, Dusty,
tick. Yep.
Cam Rayner, obviously he doesn't have the endurance yet but he will. But those types, the Dangerfield types, that are a threat in the midfield and a threat forward, inside, outside, and can play tall or small.
There you go. Sounds pretty good. Where can we find those, Cal?
That's how I used to play.
I highly doubt that. Apparently that's how Matt Thompson plays. Want to ask you a couple of wider recruiting issues. Your thoughts on a mid-season trading or drafting period?
Well, personally, I'm not a fan of it, but as with most of these things, if the AFL comes up with it and gives us the rule, we'll just deal with it.
Yep.
And we'll try and make the most of it. There's always opportunities to be explored. If that was to come in, however it would look, we would just try and find out a way to utilise it to the best of our abilities if we think we could. Otherwise, you know, we're happy for it to work for other clubs.
Draft night live trading does seem like it will come in. Mm. Do you like that?
Yeah, I like that. As a fan of the American sports, I think it livens up draft night. I'm not sure whether there'll be too much activity with us. The hard thing in our game and our draft is that there's not great currency. So, you know, a third round pick's not worth much. So if you want to move up the order in the first round, you're going to need to give up something. And if you don't have players to give up, I'm not really sure what clubs are going to be willing to do to get a deal done. But I think it just the flexibility that it brings will definitely be good for the game.
Do you think the draft is too compromised?
I wouldn't say too compromised. It's definitely compromised significantly, but I don't think you can ever say it's too compromised. This year is probably the first year where we're going to see, you know, maybe 30% of the draft is bidded on players like Academy, Father, Son, NGA. Next year it might not be the case. This might just be one year where it looks like it's going to be like that, especially in the early part of the draft. But I don't think, unless it becomes a trend and it's every year that it's like this, I wouldn't say it's too compromised.
I know your old mate Luke Power from the Giants will be listening because he's an avid listener of the Road to the Draft podcast. So g'day to Luke. But your views on the changes to the NAB AFL Academy structure and how that's panning out looking forward?
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see how it goes. I think the fact that more players will get better coaching and development is probably better. In the past it was good to have the NAB AFL Academy because it was the elite 30 or 35, whereas now it's probably 100 and 120 and it's not that elite level coaching that they would have got. But I think that the state hubs are going to be very good at managing those kids and coaching those kids the same way as what the Luke Power and the AFL Academy group did. So I think it's just more opportunities for more kids. As long as it doesn't become an extension of the state programs.
Yeah. It needs a bit of cream, doesn't it?
Yeah, it needs to be about the players who have got the AFL potential rather than kids who are going to be good state league players.
And the final one, what's the biggest issue in the trade or recruiting landscape? And I guess if you were Gil for the day, like what would you change?
I think it's a pretty simple one for me. National Reserves comp. I think that's a no-brainer.
Yes.
I think so
love that. Everyone wants it.
Everyone wants it.
Can we just get it in already?
Well, it would deplete the other standing state competitions. I think that's a concern, isn't it? But I think most people would like to see. And once their reserves competition, play them as curtain raisers, please.
Yes, please.
That's the next step on that one. Hey, Adrian, really appreciate you coming in. Your insights are fantastic. So I think everyone listening in, Giants supporter or not, would have enjoyed the last half an hour or so. So I really appreciate it.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
Before we go, song of the week, Cal?
Yeah, song of the week this week. Spent a long time thinking about this.
No, you didn't, because I reminded you about it this morning. Like, oh, gosh.
It's Are You Here by The Presets featuring DMAs. So The Presets, obviously one of Australia's leading sort of techno bands and electronic bands, and DMAs, Australia's best band.
You're obsessed with the DMAs.
Like, you like them, Adrian?
You've told me about them for years. I have not even listened to them.
Well, don't listen to this one. This is a bit of a mix, but... just go and listen to the DMAs.
I'll give them a go.
Do you know what you should do, Cal, is put in a request here at AFL House, because they've just recently installed speakers into the bathrooms here. So when you go into the toilets now, there's music playing. So maybe we should play either our podcast or Song of the Week in the bathroom. So can you go speak to Tony Abate about that?
I will speak to Tony about that. The other thing that you want to speak about is getting yourself back onto the Etihad Stadium screen. So that's really exciting. I'm not sure if you're saying this, Adrian. You might have, because you're in the precinct. But the big screen when you walk down the bridge.
Yeah.
And that's regularly on that now.
In case you missed it.
Yeah, that's the show.
Good show
that
on Sunday night.
She hosts.
You were on it for a little bit when I was away. You took over the show and you were on it for like 3 weeks in a row,
Now I walk into work and see Nat on the big screen telling me stuff in case I missed. Well, I didn't miss it because I saw it about half an hour ago when I walked past before. But anyway, no, very good, Nat. Great job.
Oh, yeah, thanks. All right. Well, everyone, please subscribe to our podcast either on iTunes or your favourite podcast app. We have thoroughly enjoyed.
By the way, how's our new artwork?
What artwork?
You know, on podcast.
Oh, yes.
What do you think, Adrian?
Oh, I liked it.
You like it?
It was good. Yep.
See, Nat thinks that I look like Liam Gallagher.
Okay, no, everyone else is saying that. I tried not to say that because I knew your head would just blow up with that compliment. So,
Something a bit different, though.
No, I think it's good. Yeah. Why have you waited so long to do that?
I don't know.
We were lacking some creativity, and as soon as Jack, our producer, stepped out, it all came flowing in. But, Adrian, thank you once again for joining us. Thank you, everyone, for listening in. We'll see you again next week.